It's Northeast Delta Dental Radio with Tom Raffio.
Welcome to Northeast Delta Dental Radio. I'm Tom Raffio for Northeast Delta Dental Radio, and I'm also the head coach of the dental insurance company known as Northeast Delta Dental. Well, it's hard to believe it's August 22nd or 23rd, depending on when you're listening to this. If you're listening to this on Saturday, August 22nd, we air at 9:05, and Sunday, August 23rd, we air at 7:05, and if there are nuances in today's program that you'd like to pick up, just go on anydelta.com, click the radio section, and you'll see about 12 years of these radio shows, including this one. Want to give out a big shout out to my last week's guest, Jeff Brapsis, who gave us an update on the Aviation Museum of New Hampshire, which many people did not know does in fact exist at the Manchester Boston Regional Airport in Manchester. They're doing many things virtually now for obvious reasons, but Jeff did a great job. He also is affiliated with Hippo Press. But this weekend with me is Peter Francisi, who is the author of a book called Communities and Consequences, actually two editions, the first one back in 2008, and then about 11 years later, a second edition co-authored with Lorraine Stewart Merrill. So, Peter, thank you for joining me this weekend, and thank you for allowing me the opportunity to share, I think, some important trends and facts that the greater audience needs to hear. So thank you for joining me.
Well, my pleasure. And thank you for being one of the sponsors for both the first book, which I co-authored with Lorraine Merrill, and the second book as well, just recently was published. So it's we are particularly grateful to Northeast, to you and Northeast Delta Dental for your support of our work. As you know, this is the second of two books, and I believe I can speak for myself. In any case, this is the last one.
Well, you say that, but I know you, Peter. I'm not sure. So maybe Lorraine and I will get you interested in chapter three, so to speak, of your third book. And, of course, we met originally way back many years ago as part of a presentation at Leadership New Hampshire. And, of course, that's emerging and current leaders in New Hampshire. The program's been going on since the mid-90s, so there are literally thousands of people who have gone through the program. But your presentation, and then we also had you present at Northeast Delta Dental's long-range planning, really got people thinking in terms of, and this was back, 2008 circa, basically with the aging population that we had, what are the decisions, that local planning boards are making that are discouraging younger people, to stay, in New Hampshire. And of course, this led to, many initiatives such as stay, work, play, et cetera, as well as the emphasis on 65 by 25, which is by the year 2025, we want, 65% of the adult population to have, a college degree or certification. But in rereading, what I did in preparing for the show, I reread the 2008 book, and I read the new book. And it seems actually, and maybe you're in the best position to say it, but it seems like it's been exacerbated actually, in these last 10 years where, back in 2008, yes, we were an aging population in New Hampshire, but maybe, maybe in the middle of the pack as far as the United States. And now, along with Vermont and a couple other states, we're, one of the oldest, if not the oldest, population. So what's happened in the last 10 years, and what do you think caused it, and what do you think we can do about it? That's a lot in there, and so take your time.
Sure. Well, what happened, of course, was that the baby boomers got older, and in the tens of thousands, in fact, close to 100,000 or more baby boomers moved here from other states when they were very young, back in the 90s and early 2000s. And they raised their children here. They went to school and college and so forth. And now they are getting on in years. The oldest one is in their 70s and the youngest in their 60s. And so their children are all educated, and now their focus is on preserving what funds they have and not paying any taxes. And so the result of this rapid aging of the population made us the second oldest state in the nation. Only Maine is an older state, and we are aging so rapidly that Maine has a hard time keeping up. I have to go back to the fundamentals. And the fundamentals, as far as New Hampshire is concerned, is how radically different we are from the other states in New England, other five states in New England. We're the only state in the Northeast, in fact, that has no income tax or no sales tax. And that's not terribly unusual nationwide. But we are also, if not the only state, one of only one or two, that finances public education entirely through the local property tax. And because we are a New England state, we believe, as most other New England states believe, in local control. We have 283 municipalities, which is an awful lot for a state with 1.3 million people. There are many, many counties in the rest of the country with counties with that many people, that many residents. We have 162 school districts. Again, other states, one per county, we'd have 10 or 12 if we were in some other part of the nation. So the combination of local control and a desire for local control, combined with the fact that almost the entire burden of paying for public education falls on individual towns, most of which are quite small, makes for a difficult situation for people who realize that they have to pay a very heavy property tax twice a year, or sometimes once a year, but mostly twice a year. That's a tough combination, because it gives rise to the belief that if we could only hold down the number of children, we could not pay so much in property taxes. And this is a very persistent myth.
Yeah, so you call that myth one, which is not allowing any affordable housing for families with children would keep down property tax. So, and you have data in both books, you know, supporting that. So why do you think, how does that, mythologies usually are based on some perception and maybe one or two, you know, real anecdotes. So how did that myth become so pervasive?
It became pervasive because if you go on the website of the state of New Hampshire, the Department of Education, they publish for every school district in the state the cost per child. It is very difficult to find on that website the total cost of running a school district, you know, so many millions of dollars for the school district, but the cost per child is always given to the nearest penny. It averages, most recent number, $15,865.26. So fixed in people's minds is the fact that every child is costing the taxpayer, you, the taxpayer, $15,865.26.
No, you're absolutely right. And as you know, I was chair of the State Board of Education for many years, and sometimes we had to put those statistics out there because we're obligated to do it. And also, we were concerned with one of your earlier points, you know, with 162 school districts, meaning everybody has a superintendent, everybody right. has, you know, their own photocopier, everybody yep. has a set of principals, and basically any time two towns tried to combine, there was always, you know, citizen controversy. And in fact, even in the economic challenges, not this is actually pre-COVID, but you still had some towns wanting to separate. And the few areas where there is an affiliation, you know, towns wanted to separate. Let's do this. Why don't we? So the website is communitiesandconsequences, all one word, .org. And I assume people can purchase the book through there. Is it available elsewhere?
Oh, absolutely. It's available in virtually every bookstore in the entire state. And I think that what the book is trying to do this time, that is very different from the last time, is to take a more positive approach. The last time we said the unbalancing of New Hampshire's human ecology or demographics. Now we're talking about rebalancing New Hampshire's human ecology or demographics. And it takes a more positive message in the book and in the film, which will accompany the book in another couple of months, and talk about what various places in New Hampshire are doing, such as Bradford and other small communities, to revitalize the local economy with young people and show that young people, in fact, are not a burden on your property tax, but in fact will do a lot to foster economic growth, both locally and statewide.
A boon. And we've seen that, you know. Bedford built the high school and the place is booming. And so those points are becoming obvious. I will talk about with Lorraine about the Bradford story. And I think, to be fair to yourself, I mean, I think back in 2008, I think you actually had to startle the body politic with the numbers, because things, you know, everybody, you know, even though that was right about the time of the sort of the first economic challenges we were facing, I think people, I know when you share this information and when I've shared versions of this, people are first startled. So I think, to be fair to you, I think 2008, you had to sort of level set the body politic, and I'm glad 10 years later you're actually going to provide some examples where you can actually, you know, move forward and do something about this, because all of us are in this together. So in the film, who plays Peter Francisi?
No one. I'm not even in the film.
Oh, God. I thought maybe you got like Gene Hackman or somebody.
No. Thank
okay.
you.
No. All right.
Film, but they decided that this time I was just way too old to be talking on film.
Too funny. So let's take the second half. We'll get Lorraine, and she'll talk about, you know, myth three and how we go forward. So again, the website is Communities and Consequences. Welcome back to Northeast Delta Dental Radio. Tom Raffio for Northeast Delta Dental Radio. And this weekend is interesting. It's August 22nd and 23rd. In our first half of the show, we had one of the co-authors of Communities and Consequences, Peter Francisi, who I met way back on the turn of the century at Leadership New Hampshire and a few other events. And we, Northeast Delta Dental, was one of the sponsors for the original book, which really kind of level set where we are statistically in terms of the aging population. And then fast forward about 11 years, Peter and Lorraine Merrill then wrote book number two, which kind of gets into the positive messages in the book about how we can perhaps and hopefully, you know, change the narrative. So, Lorraine, just to kind of level set with you, so we have gone through myth one, the not allowing any affordable housing projects for families with children would keep down property costs, and myth two, incentivizing the construction of housing restricted only people of age 55 or older would cost towns nothing. So perhaps given that, why don't you maybe amplify a little bit on myth two and then get into the myth three, the town and city planning board's belief, and then let's talk about basically ways we can make sure our towns and cities are the kinds of places where we want young people to settle. So, is that fair enough, Lorraine?
That's great, Tom, and we thank you for this opportunity to talk with you and your audience.
And it's a great book. And again, as Peter mentioned, you can get the book in all places in New Hampshire, you know, such as Gibson's. The website is Communities and Consequences, all one word, .org, and of course there will be an accompanying film clip. So why don't you talk about myth two about incentivizing?
I'm reminded. I've been working with Jay Childs, the filmmaker, on the film, and there's a gentleman in the town of Pelham. He's, I believe, the chair of the Zoning Board of Adjustment, who says, you know, this problem has been building for a long time, and we should have done something about it 10 or 20 years ago, but we haven't. And in fact, we've had our thumb on the scale for the older people with incentivizing all that age 55 and up restricted housing, and that it is time, in fact, to put the thumb on the scale on the other side, to make it much more accessible for younger people and families to find room, places to live in our communities. And that's, I think, we've just seen such impact. And it's nothing against old people. It's discriminatory to have housing, and especially the only or the most affordable housing being built in our towns and cities, to be restricted only to people over 55. When we all know that young people starting out and working families with children, boy, they have every bit as much need for affordability in their housing. These various demographic brackets actually like some of the same kinds of housing. Not so big. You know, you have some of the older people are downsizing. And so they end up competing with young people for the very limited numbers of smaller scale houses and apartments.
You know, that's an interesting point about the workforce, and we will talk about how this overall issue relates to the workforce shortage. But when we do a lot of courses and seminars on the multiple generations of workers in your building, you know, it always comes down to, you know, all these perceptions. But the reality is, you know, everybody, whether you're in your 20s or 30s or in your 60s, you want to be respected and you want to self-actualize and you want to connect with people, although I know it's hard now with the virtual thing. And so that is interesting what you said about, both younger and older people, you know, are maybe competing for the same housing. How about the myth that planning boards, they think they're in their own compartment, and if they do something in their own town, it has no impact in society.
That's just human nature, and it's what they feel like what they can control is within their town, right? I mean, that's correct and understandable. But I think what we're saying is that we need to raise our sights a little higher and take into consideration the larger region, the communities of, you know, our towns in cities in New Hampshire are indeed generally small, and they're close together. I'm in the seacoast here, where there are the economies and the social organizations, the schools, they cross town lines. And that's so we really need to be working together, cooperating. We have one chapter in the book about the Upper Valley region because they have have a history of working together as a region, even crossing state lines.
Vermont, sure, yeah.
Right. And they are now really applying that approach more diligently and tenaciously to the workforce or affordable housing needs, which are so tremendous in that region as well. We're saying, you know, we've got to look beyond the immediate town lines and to the economy overall, because the economy in the next town is going to affect the economy and the real estate values and things like that in the next town.
Absolutely.
All in this together.
You get it. Together we can. I always say that now. One of the things from probably 2014 till now, although, you know, with the pandemic has changed a little bit, but you couldn't go a week without getting a flyer for a conference on the workforce shortage.
Yes.
So tell us how your findings relate to that challenge.
It has everything to do with that challenge, Tom. Every sector of our economy, up until this pandemic hit, every sector of New Hampshire's economy was afflicted with workforce shortages, and particularly urgent are the healthcare, the elder care.
And early learning, yep.
If you have a older family member who needs a lot of assistance and you want to keep them in their home, you need home health aides and so forth, it's a struggle. And the people who are doing that work, who are holding those jobs and caring for those who are very special to us, it's also true of early childhood child care workers.
Absolutely.
They're having to drive so far to get to their jobs because they can't afford to live. I mean, it's true hardship and often suffering, and it's
that affects their employers too, because obviously if a dad or a mom are worrying about where their children are being cared for, or they're in this virtual world are distracted by their children because the daycare is closed down, obviously they're not being as productive. So employers really, need to, get involved with.
Right. So it's not just for employers. It's not just a concern of whether they can get the help they need in their own business, but whether their employees are able to get the support.
Correct. And then we have a great new term now called underemployed, where people are coming into work or working from home, but they're obviously worried. And if you have a worried mom or dad working for you, then obviously they're not going to be fully productive. And of course, as you and Peter have both noted to me offline, the current pandemic really has really heightened this issue with critical worker shortages for the essential workers. So
it has, and I'm really hoping. I mean, there's been, for the first time in a long time, there's been a recognition of our local heroes, the essential workers. Thank you, essential workers, and people are including essential workers like delivery people, grocery store clerks, people who are producing and distributing food and other vital supplies. We need to think about where can these folks live. We see now that we really need them, and we need them close at hand. We need them in our communities.
It's great to see those hero signs. And in my field, I just wrote an op-ed on this in terms of hygienists and dental assistants and dentists as heroes too, because they're obviously in a field where they're dealing with the droplets from the nose and mouth and things like that. And and a dentist can't adequately do her or his job without the assistant, dental assistants, and hygienists. So they're heroes as well. So let's close with some positive messages. As I said to Peter, I felt in 2008 it was necessary to. I know when the data of the sort of how old, average old we are as a population, that kind of shocked people, and I think basically the book in 2008 really had to level set the audience, and 11 or 12 years later, now it's gotten worse, whereas before maybe we were the middle of the pack as a country, vis-a-vis the country. Now we're like the second oldest average wise. So, but there are some good stories, such as Bradford. Tell us about some of those good stories.
Well, there are I think increasingly people are recognizing that this is a problem, that we are out of balance, that it is damaging to our communities and our quality of life, and that we need to help to restore the balance and encourage and welcome more diverse members to our community, diverse in age and income and different backgrounds. We have a chapter in the book about new Americans and the important roles that they are playing in revitalizing many of our communities. There are planning tools that we discuss in the book, like form-based code, which sounds like such an abstract thing, but is designed to make our communities more the way we want them to look and feel, rather than always trying to micromanage what uses are going on in our buildings. And various young people running for local office, getting involved, and the older members of the community welcoming them into those roles and you know, mentoring them, encouraging them, and supporting the kinds of activities that they're doing to try and improve their communities, businesses that they are starting. It's Bradford is a great example. You mentioned a group of young people who had grown up in the area and all had dispersed, gone off to college and off to work and have adventures in different places, all kind of decided to come back. And they were interested in food and agriculture, which is something near and dear to me, and started the Kearsarge Food Hub and what they call the Sweet Beet Farm and Sweet Beet Market.
It's a great part of the book. Yeah, I enjoy that. And I just think the book in general, we're running out of time, is everybody should really read it if you live in New Hampshire and want to keep it the special place it is. The website, again, is communitiesandconsequences.org, and it's just the right length. Having published the book, I know that my publisher said keep it between 100 and 125 pages. It's like a handbook.
Mm-hmm,
it's easily understandable. Someone on the planning board could pick it up and probably get a lot of knowledge out of it. Again, the website is communitiesandconsequences.org. There will be an accompanying film shortly. You can get it at local books. And I'll ask the same question I asked Peter. Who's playing Lorraine in this film?
No, Lorraine's not in the film. but I, you know, I've helped to gather these stories and tell them. And these are the stories of people in our communities from one part of the state to another. This can happen. But it really takes people taking initiative and sticking with it. You know, because there will be opposition at various points.
Right.
Those myths are still out there, and people still don't want to have, you know, quote unquote affordable housing. There are others who really do, who recognize the need and want to support it, but they've got to actively support it.
So I bet you we've engaged the audience. So get the book. Reach out to your local time. Lorraine Merrill, thank you for joining me this weekend with Peter earlier as well.
Thank you so much, Tom.